Excuse me. Got a good looking, good crowd this morning. I thought they had a good looking crowd. I guess it's a good looking crowd too. But we got a good number out this morning. So we'll try to finish up this morning the book of Genesis, the last four chapters, 47 through 50. I remind you again, a little exercise I asked you to work on. Put a number of the pages, number of the paper, 1 through 50, and then write a little short line about each chapter. I think you'll find that helpful if you'll do that. It's a little short review, very, very short. Of course, Joseph's in Egypt, governor of the land, stockpiled grain, and now he's doling it out. That's the years of the famine come. And he sent and brought his family, his old father, Jacob, or Israel, down. And now he goes and tells Pharaoh that they're there. Pharaoh makes them their his chief shepherds over his land. But on the way down to Egypt, they stop at Beersheba. And God tells Jacob in a dream, go down there. Go, and there I will make you a great nation. God's told Abraham and Isaac and Jacob all along that your descendants be like the stars of the sky, sand of the seashore. And he kind of restates that here now to Jacob. Go, and I'll make you a great nation there. And I'll bring you back up again. So they moved down there. 70 people arrived there in Egypt and put them in the land of Goshen. We'll talk about that a little bit more this morning. And we talked about last time several things we can learn from last week's lesson. Perseverance and guilt. Of course, the brothers felt guilty because they had sold Joseph and now was coming back to haunt them. They were afraid of it. We'll get to that some more this morning. Forgiveness, we talked about a lot. The fact that Joseph did forgive them for what they had done to him. God's providence, God's purpose, his plan in this. And then, of course, the faith of Joseph. So let's get into chapter 47, starting on this morning. Chapter 47, we're going to read the first. We'll do quite a bit of reading this morning. I can't read all four chapters, it's too much, but we'll read quite a bit of it. Then I've got some outside sources I'll read some from, too. So chapter 47, read the first 12 verses. Joseph went and told Pharaoh and said, my father and my brothers, their flocks and their herds, and all they possess that come from Canaan. And indeed, they are in the land of Goshen. And he took five men from among his brothers and presented them to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to his brothers, what's your occupation? They said to Pharaoh, your servants are shepherds, both we and also our fathers. They said to Pharaoh, we have come to sojourn in the land because your servants have no pasture for their flock, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. Now, therefore, please let your servants dwell in the land of Goshen. Pharaoh spoke to Joseph, saying, your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is before you. Have your father and your brothers dwell in the best of the land. Let them dwell in the land of Goshen. And if you know of any competent men among them, make them chief herdsmen over my flock. Joseph brought his father to Jacob and set him before Pharaoh. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh. Keep that point in mind. Jacob blessed Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Jacob, how old are you? And Jacob said to Pharaoh, the days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life. They have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my father, the days of their pilgrimage. So Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from before Pharaoh. Joseph situated his father and his brothers and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, the best of the land, and the land of Ramesses, as Pharaoh had commanded. Joseph provided his father and his brothers and all his father's household with bread according to the numbers in their families. So Joseph goes and tells Pharaoh that my family's arrived here. Pharaoh had provided the carts to send to go bring them down from Canaan. And Pharaoh asked their occupation, and just as Joseph had told them to do, he told them that they were shepherds. So that would separate them from the Egyptians, because shepherds were an abomination to the Egyptians. They would keep them separated. Pharaoh said, make them chief shepherds over my herds. And then we have this thing, Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And they placed the family then in the best of the land. I want to read a couple of things about this little section here. All the reading will come from Kaufman's commentary, some from Homer Haiti. I have several things this morning I'd like to share with you I think will help. He said, this episode is one of the grand scenes of the Bible. Pharaoh was the autocratic ruler of the mightiest nation on earth. Jacob was the patriarchal head of God's chosen race, through whom redemption would come to all mankind. That Jacob was fully conscious of his own status and the situation is evident in what he did. So what you've got is the mightiest king on earth, and you've got Jacob, who's going to be the father of God's chosen people. That's what the comparison here is. As long as Egypt sheltered and protected the covenant people, God blessed and protected Egypt. But when another king arose who knew not Joseph, when Egypt turned viciously upon the Israel of God, the heavenly blessing was withdrawn and one disaster after another overwhelmed them. One may wonder if Pharaoh appreciated this blessing, that is a blessing from Jacob. To him, Jacob might have seemed like merely an old man seeking relief from starvation that threatened to wipe out his family. But the hand of the Almighty was upholding Jacob, and the blessing of God was surely his to bestow. So usually you have the greater blessing, the lesser. Well, how's the king of Pharaoh, how is he the lesser in this case? Because of who Jacob is. And God, through Jacob, is putting the blessing on Pharaoh. And then from verses 8 and 9, Pharaoh said to Jacob, how old are you? Jacob said to Pharaoh, the days of the years of my pilgrimage. The word pilgrimage is translated in other versions here, wanderings or earthly journey. The days of my earthly life is what Jacob is saying. The days of my earthly life are 130 years, and few and evil. Not that he's done evil, but the days are hard and difficult, have been the years of my life. They've not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers. And their pilgrimage, again, the word pilgrimage. So this is a glimpse here of how Jacob viewed his life. Neither he or his fathers ever owned any land in the land of Canaan except the burial place of Machpelah and a few acres around Shechem. They looked for the city that had the foundation of the builder and maker is God. Hebrews 11, verse 10. Jacob's word here is the testimonial to his acceptance of the promise God made Abraham and of his absolute belief in the ultimate fulfillment of it. None of the patriarchs viewed this world as their permanent dwelling place, nor the earth as a true home of the soul. The mightiest king on earth had just given him a deed to Goshen, but Jacob was still a pilgrim. Our English word pilgrim literally means one who crosses the field. A pilgrim is seeking a country that has not yet been reached. And then another thought from this phrase, few and evil have been the days of my life. Evil being hard or difficult days. Think about what some of the things that Jacob had been through. That really, not all of them he brought on himself. The preference his father had given Esau over him. Remember the favoritism showed back there? The purchase of the birthright, Esau hating him because of it. The shameful treatment he received from his father-in-law Laban in Padan Aram. The long years in servitude outdoors, 20 years he watched the flocks of Laban. The unhappiness of his wives due to the internal conditions of the family. Rachel couldn't have children. Leah made a case out of it. His hatred of his sons toward his favorite son, Joseph. The sale of Joseph, and then the presenting to Jacob of the coat smeared in blood. the rape of his daughter Dinah, the shameless massacre of the Shechemites by his two sons because of that rape, Reuben's incest with one of Jacob's wives, and now this famine's come upon them. Simeon got put in prison in Egypt, and of course the horror he had when he had to learn that Benjamin had to go down to Egypt. There's just a few of the things that come to mind that Jacob would say, few and evil, difficult have been the days of my life. They were put in the land of Goshen. Verse 11, if you look at it, Joseph situated his father and his brothers and gave them possession in the land of Egypt in the best of the land of Ramesses. So now it's changed from Goshen, now it's referred to as Ramesses. Well, that's a city, of course. Go over to Exodus chapter 1, you find out that when the Israelites were slaves, they actually built the city of Ramesses for Pharaoh. Moses is writing this. These are called the books of Moses. Moses is writing this many, many years later. So he referred to it by the name of the city as opposed to the area of Goshen at that time. So the explanation for the maybe confusion there why it's referred to different ways. So the famine is still severe. Look at verses 13 and 14. There was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very severe. So if the land of Egypt and all the land of Canaan languished because of the famine, Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan for the grain which they bought. Joseph brought the money to Pharaoh's house. One common side note. One of the guys over in Zim that we support, the crop failure over there this year has been just total failure throughout the country. And one of the guys actually sent this week and said the government has now called it a famine in Zim this year. And I think about that when I read about this. So famine's been going on. All their money that the Egyptians had, they had brought to Joseph to buy grain with, so there's no money left in the land to purchase more grain. So it seems like the next year when it comes around time to buy grain, they say, we don't have any money to buy grain with. And Jacob says, Joseph says, well, give me your flocks, your herds. So he takes their flocks and the herds in exchange for the grain. People say, we got to eat. It's either that or die. So what gives our flocks and herds to us if we're going to die? The next year again, still famine. They got no money. They got no flocks and herds. And they got to eat or die again. And so this year, they exchange their land and their servitude, their own selves, to Pharaoh to have food to eat. And Joseph puts a 20%, a one-fifth tax. I'm going to give you the seed. I'm going to give you grain to eat. You take that seed and you plant. And now we get into the end of the famine. You plant that, and then from the crop that you produce, a fifth of it comes to Pharaoh, the tax, because Pharaoh owns your land, Pharaoh owns you, so that's the tax. And then the part that's left, you keep proceeding for the next year, and you feed your families with that. Verses 27 through 31. So Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt, in the country of Goshen. They had possessions there and grew and multiplied exceedingly. Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years, so the length of Jacob's life was 147 years. When time drew near that Israel must die, he called his son Joseph and said to him, now if I found favor in your sight, please put your hand under my thigh and deal kindly and truly with me. Please do not bury me in Egypt, but let me lie with my fathers. You shall carry me out of Egypt, bury me in their burial place. He said, I will do as you have said. Then he said, swear to me. And he swore to him. So Israel bowed himself on the head of his bed. Grew and multiplied exceedingly. go down to Egypt. I'll make you a great nation there. One of the guys in calculating some numbers said that if only 100 people went down, we know the number 70, but that didn't count the wives and the children that went down. But he just took the number. If 100 people went down into Egypt with Jacob, with a 5% annual growth rate, put them at over 200 people in the 17 years before Jacob died, then at the time of the Exodus, 400 years later, they would have reached over 2 million. They have over 600,000 fighting men above the age of 20. If you look at Numbers chapter 1, verse 46, it says they had 603,500 men of war by that time. They grew exceedingly. I'll make you a great nation, make you a great nation there. So Jacob's 147. He was 130 when he arrived in Egypt, and he's about to die. And he tells Joseph, don't bury me in Egypt. Take me back up and bury me in the tomb of my fathers. And Joseph promised that he would do as his father Jacob requested. Let's take now time to read all of chapter 48. It's not too long. And it came to pass after these things that Joseph was told, indeed, your father is sick. He took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. Now notice the orders are listed. Manasseh and Ephraim, oldest, youngest. Manasseh and Ephraim. And Jacob was told, look, your son Joseph is coming to you. Israel strengthened himself and sat up on the bed. Jacob said to Joseph, God Almighty, we talked about that phrase before, appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me. He said to me, behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply you and make of you a multitude of people and give this land to your descendants after you as an everlasting possession. And now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, what did Jacob just do? Turn around. Your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, who were born to you in the land of Egypt, for I came to you in Egypt, are mine, as Reuben and Simeon are mine. They shall be mine. Your offspring whom you beget after them shall be yours and be called by the name of their brothers and their inheritance. But as for me, when I came from Padan, Rachel died beside me in the land of Canaan on the way when there was but a little distance to go to Ephrath. And I buried her there on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. Israel saw Joseph's sons and said, who are these? Joseph said, his father, they are my sons whom God has given me in this place. And he said, bring them to me and I will bless them. Now the eyes of Israel were dim with age, so he could not see. And Joseph brought them near and kissed them and embraced them. Israel said to Joseph, I had not thought to see your face, but in fact, God has also shown me your offspring. So Joseph brought them forth beside his knees and bowed down with his face to the earth. The governor of all the land of Egypt, bowing before his aged father with his face to the earth. Joseph took them both, Ephraim with his right hand toward Israel's left hand, Manasseh with his left hand toward Israel's right hand, and brought them near to him. Now, if that's kind of confusing, what Joseph is doing, he's taking them in the proper hand so that when Jacob, facing him, reaches out his right hand, it will go on Manasseh's head, Manasseh being the oldest. So Joseph's got them lined up properly, where if he just reaches his hand out to bless them, the right hand will be on the hand of his oldest son. So that's what he has. Verse 14, Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on Ephraim's head, who was the younger, his left hand on Manasseh's head, guiding his hands knowingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, God before whom my father Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who fed me all my life long to this day, The angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads, that my name be named upon them, the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. Now when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand on the head of Ephraim, it displeased him. He took hold of his father's hand and removed it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. Joseph said to his father, Not so, my father, but this one is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head. But his father refused and said, I know, my son, I know. He also shall become a people. He also shall be great. But truly the younger brother shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall become a multitude of nations. So he blessed him that day. Thy Israel, you will be blessed, saying, may God bless you as Ephraim and Manasseh. And he said, Ephraim before Manasseh. Then Israel said to Joseph, behold, I am dying, but God will be with you and bring you back to the land of your fathers. Moreover, I have given you one portion of, above your brothers, that I took from the hand of the Amorites with my sword and my bow. So Jacob takes his son to Joseph. Joseph blesses Ephraim and Manasseh, crossing his hands so that the younger Ephraim gets the blessings. And he says, they shall be as my own sons. The two sons born to you now with Ephraim and Manasseh shall be as my sons. Any additional sons born to you will be yours. But these two will get inheritance from me, just like Reuben and Simeon, just like any of my other sons. We'll talk about that in a second. So Ephraim the younger shall be the greater, and the entire nation of Israel is often referred to as Ephraim. And through his sons, Joseph gets a double portion. So Ephraim, all throughout the book of Hosea and in several places in prophecy, the whole nation of Israel, the northern kingdom, is referred to as Ephraim. We pause before leaving this chapter to think about this as commentary, about the vast significance of it. By Jacob's legal adoption of the two sons of Joseph, who would inherit on a parity with the other sons of Jacob, he assured Joseph the double portion. He gave Rachel three of the 12 patriarchs instead of only two. He set up a situation in which Levi could be separated for the work of the Lord and still retain the number 12, considered by the Hebrews to be a sacred number. So you had the 12 tribes of Israel take Levi out because of the priesthood tribe, but you still have 12 tribes left because you take out Levi, you take out Joseph, insert Ephraim and Manasseh, and you still have 12 tribes, the 12 tribes of Israel. Because Ephraim and Manasseh are counted tribes just like the others are. And all that comes about from what happens here in chapter 48. Chapter 49, Jacob called his sons and said, gather together, let me tell you what will befall you in the last days. So he gathered together and hear the sons of Jacob, listen to your father. Then he goes through and he names what's going to happen to each one of these sons in the future. Reuben, the firstborn, is as unstable as water. Remember, he has committed fornication with his father's wife. So you're going to see Reuben taken out of the picture as far as significance is concerned. Simeon and Levi, those are the two who took vengeance on the Shechemites, went and just literally destroyed them, wiped them out after the rape of Dinah. So they're taken out of the picture. So then you get Judah. And Genesis 49:10 is one of those key verses that you need to know about, know where it is, know what it's talking about. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the lawgiver from between his feet till Shiloh comes. It's through this lineage that Christ is going to come. Omar Haydn says, the one blessing that is of particular importance is the one given to Judah. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet till Shiloh come, and to him shall the gathering of the people be. The word Shiloh it's caused some bit of difficulty for the scholar. But I believe, that's Homer Hadley writing, I believe the essential meaning of it is clear of whether it means Prince of Peace as something or one who brings peace is the opinion of others. But the idea that a kingdom of peace is developed over and over through the prophets as they write of one who would sit on David's throne and be a ruler of peace. Of course, David from the tribe of Judah, Christ descended from through David's lineage. So the scepter, the ruling arm, will not depart from Judah, the tribe of Judah, until peace, so the kingdom of peace has come. Obviously a prophecy about Christ. Zebulun would dwell on the sea and be a haven for ships. He goes through the rest of them then. Issachar compared to a strong donkey carrying burdens. Dan would judge Israel. They have some of the judges. Samson, for example, came from Dan. Gad, a troop would overcome him. But at the end, he would be overcome. Asher, you know, his bread would be fat. These things don't mean a lot. It's Judah we want to look at as far as significant ones. Joseph would be made strong by God even when others hated him. Strengthened by the hand of the mighty God of Jacob. And then Benjamin, a ravening wolf in the morning would devour prey. It's not spending a lot of time on those things there. At the end of chapter 49, verse 28, all these are the 12 tribes of Israel. And this is what their father spoke to them. He blessed them. He blessed each one according to his own blessing. He charged them and said to them, I am to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that's in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave of the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field of Ephron the Hittite as a possession for a burial place. There they buried, and here's where the list comes, there they buried Abraham and Sarah, his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah, his wife. There I buried Leah, which would be his wife. The field and the cave that's there were purchased from the sons of Heth. When Jacob had finished commanding his sons, he drew his feet up into the bed and breathed his last and was gathered to his people. So what's his request? Bury me in the land of Canaan, in that field of Machpelah, which Abraham had bought for possession. And then the others that are buried there, Abraham, his wife Sarah, Isaac, his wife Rebekah, and then Jacob's wife Leah is buried there. Rachel is not, because she died while they were traveling, buried near Bethlehem. But this will make a total of 6 that are buried there in that cave. Moving on into chapter 50. Read 1 through 6. And Joseph fell on his father's face and wept over him and kissed him. Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father. The physicians embalmed Israel. 40 days were required for him, for such are the days required for those who are embalmed. And the Egyptians mourned for him 70 days. When the days of the mourning were past, Joseph spoke to the household of Pharaoh, saying, if now I have found favor in your eyes, please speak in the hearing of Pharaoh, saying, my father made me swear, saying, behold, I am dying. In my grave, which I dug for myself in the land of Canaan, there you shall bury me. Now therefore, please let me go up and bury my father, and I will come back. Pharaoh said, go up and bury your father, as he made you swear. So Joseph went up to bury his father, and with him, all the servants of Pharaoh, and the elders. They embalm Jacob as he dies. The Egyptians had perfected that art. It's well known from history there. Born for him 70 days, quite a lengthy time for Joseph. Very large entourage went with Joseph and the family up to bury Jacob. mourned for him a long time. Since they went up the east side of Jordan, that's a little confusing. You don't know why they would have gone around and come up that way if they did, or if it's written from a different perspective. Moses writing from the other side of the Jordan when he wrote. So beyond the Jordan has a little confusing type meaning there if you read that part there. He's buried as requested in the cave of Machpelah. Verses 15 through 21. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "Perhaps Joseph will hate us, actually repay us for all the evil which we did to him." So they sent messengers to Joseph, saying, "Before your father died, he commanded, saying, 'Thus you shall say to Joseph, I beg you, please forgive the trespass of your brothers for their sin, for all the evil they did to you. Now please forgive the trespass of the servants of God of your father.' And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also went and fell down before his face, and they said, 'Behold, we are your servants.' Joseph said to them, 'Do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you meant it evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring it about this day to save many people alive. And therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones.' And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them." So to get back into Egypt, the brothers are afraid because now their father's dead. What's Joseph going to do? Revenge for what they had done to him. They plead with Joseph. Joseph says, "Do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? You meant it for me for evil. Yeah, what you did to me was wrong. You were evil to me. But God meant it for good. God had a plan." Of course, all the time Joseph didn't know that. "God meant it for good in order to bring it about as it is this day to save many people alive." How easy it would have been for Joseph to take revenge against them. Did he have a place to do it? Did he have the power to do it? Could he have done it? You see why they fear? And yet, that's not what Joseph does. Let's finish this up and we'll get back into that if we have a little time here. So Joseph dies, last part of the chapter, starting in 22. Joseph dwells in Egypt in his father's household, and Joseph lived 110 years. Joseph saw Ephraim's children to the third generation. The children of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were brought up on Joseph's knees. You don't think about Joseph being a grandfather, do you? Joseph said to his brethren, "I'm dying, but God will surely visit you, bring you out of this land, in the land which he has swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob." Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, "God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here." So Joseph died, being 110 years old. They embalmed him and put him in a coffin in Egypt. Very special request that Joseph makes. When you leave here, Faith, you're going to leave here someday. God said you would. Told Abraham before 100 years. When you leave here, take my bones with you. Thought question. What type of funeral? If they mourn for 70 days for Joseph's father, what kind of funeral do you think the Egyptians gave for Joseph, who had, through God, saved the nation from the famine? Imagine a state funeral for him. The Egyptians embalmed Joseph, placed him in a coffin. Remember the promises. "I am dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land, land which you swore to Abraham, Isaac, and to Jacob. Faith of Joseph. And it's the very last part of the book of Genesis. God will keep his promises and take you back to the land of Canaan. Confident commentary closing the book out. What a glorious book is the book of Genesis. In this marvelous narrative, the principal purpose was that of outlining the providential manner in which God brought about the separation of the Hebrews in order to bless all the families of men. How he providentially overruled the sins, the hatred, the failures, and the disobedience of men in order to achieve his purpose. And how for thousands of years, he guided the chosen nation to that hour when the angels of heaven would shout over the hills of Judea, "Glory to God in the highest, for there is born to you this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord." All that being set up in the book of Genesis. I have exercise number 2 for you. After you get the 1 through 50 done, make your list of 2 columns, faith, failings. You go back and list all the people who fit under each column. We talked about that through here several times. List the people of faith. List the failings. Some people will be on both sides. We'll talk about that Wednesday night. I got a review lined up for Wednesday night. Looking forward to going through that with you. Some of these things will help you prepare for that. Guilt's a heavy thing to bear, Jimmy. They still got the guilt. Yeah, you see why Reuben, Simeon, and Levi are taken out, right?